D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet's NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast. Elliot, I would like to start with the team that you led off your column with yesterday, the Pittsburgh Penguins. As you write, the Penguins have let teams know that they are open for business. And we've already seen one trade, Lars Eller, sent back to the Washington Capitals a couple of days ago. But of course, a lot of people are interested in the fates of Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and Erik Karlsson. Your colleague, Kevin Weeks, at NHL Network, during a segment, had a very interesting idea. He wondered if Sidney Crosby and the Predators could be a match, depending on what Sidney Crosby decides to do. Now, Crosby just re-signed with the Penguins. He has a full no-movement clause, if I'm not mistaken, so he has total control over his situation. But so this is a two-part question. First part.
You are not mistaken about that.
Okay, good to know. First part, what is your read on Sidney Crosby's take on what's going on with the Penguins? And if he were to exercise his no movement clause, or at least exercise that he would like to be moved, I should say, do you see a possibility where the Predators could be a team interested in Sidney Crosby's services?
Well, first of all, if he was available, I don't know who wouldn't be interested.
That is true.
Number two, if he went anywhere, I think Nathan MacKinnon would be like, I think Nathan MacKinnon would like kidnap Crosby and drag him to Colorado in his trunk. So, like, I don't know that anybody else would put up a bigger fight to get him. You know, like, I think this, Adam, I really think if Sidney Crosby wanted to leave Pittsburgh, he wouldn't have signed the extension this offseason. You know, I think he wanted assurances that the team was going to try to compete as much as it could. And once he got that, he said, I'm in. And I do think it is important to him that he is a Penguin from beginning to end. The one thing I have always wondered about with him, Adam, is that during his time in Pittsburgh, and he's been there since the 05-06 season, they have never quit trying to win. It's never happened. They have never rebuilt. They have always moved forward, or at least tried to tread water. There are signs here that while they're not necessarily going to go rock bottom, they are prepared to wave the white flag on whatever it is they're doing now. And that is the one thing that he's never really had to deal with. And I don't think it would happen now, and I'm not even convinced it will happen. But if the losing, and if he ever gets to a point where he's like, because I think he always thought we can still make the playoffs, we can still make the playoffs. It's going to be really hard for them to make the playoffs, especially the way they've played. I think that if he ever thought that it's just the way it's going to be and they may not, quote unquote, you know, I don't even know if try to win is the right phrase, but I think if reality hits him in the face and he says, I don't know if I can handle this, that's the one thing I've always wondered about, but we're not there yet.
Over the weekend, the Predators waived Dante Fabbro. He was claimed by the Columbus Blue Jackets. From what is your sense as to why it didn't work out for Dante Fabbro in Nashville? And now that they are clear of $2.5 million in cap space with the with the departure of Fabbro, could this be a precursor for a potential move for Barry Trotz?
Well, I think that I'll answer the second part of your question first. I think that everybody knows that Barry Trotz is trying to do things. It's no secret. He's told you, he's told others. You know, I think that, you know, if he could do something, he would have done it already. So the answer to your second part of your question, Adam, is an easy yes. Like, he is trying, and if he gets something he likes, he will do it. The thing about Favreau is it's amazing to me, you know, Adam, you look back, and, you know, Charlie McAvoy in Boston's had a rough start to the season, but that's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. And they were drafted in the same draft, and there was a big debate at the time, who's better, Charlie McAvoy or Dante Favreau? And it was a fair debate. You know, you could come up with either guy, and you could make a convincing argument either way. He just didn't get to, you know, where I mean, you guys see him more than I do. I would defer to you in ways as to why it happened, but he just never got to where people thought that he was. And, you know, I don't know that it's the Predators. I don't know that it's, maybe he just wasn't what we thought. I don't know. But the fact is that him at that number scared a lot of people off. You know, Columbus took the chance, but there weren't a lot of teams that didn't like that number tied to Favreau. A lot of teams that could afford, who could use a chance to give him another opportunity. And we'll see where it goes. He played just under 20 minutes in his first game. It was the most he played in 50 games going back to a year ago at this time. And we'll see where it goes. But unfortunately, he was such a highly regarded prospect at the time of his draft. It never got there.
We'll talk with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Now, Elliot, Monday, the Hockey Hall of Fame inducted their new members. Obviously, David Poyer went in, but then Shea Weber goes in also. It's fitting that both of these guys go in at the same time, considering years ago what happened with the trade. And I'm sure Shea Weber wasn't happy about the trade. I'm sure many Nashville fans were not happy with the trade. But I'm sure over the years, the fences have been mended. But what was the talk, knowing that from yourself or from your colleagues, knowing that Shea Weber and Poyer were going in at the same time?
Well, first of all, Derek, I'd say they were both deserving. Like, they both deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think, you know, sometimes people go into the Hall of Fame and people look at it like, what? That person got into the Hall of Fame? I don't think anybody was arguing about either case in this one. You know, it was, you know what? It's funny. Like, you know what's interesting about it, Derek, is that they both kind of made jokes about it. But, like, you know, they both kind of made it in that half-joking way that it was kind of like it's forgotten, but it's not forgotten. And, you know, like, and the one thing is, you can see, like, when they talk about it, it's still a little bit raw. Not a lot, I think, like, but, like, so there's one guy I know who knows Weber kind of well, one of his former teammates. And he just said, like one of the things that you can do is you can kind of bring it up, like, in a surface matter. Mm-hmm. But, like, there was one time he was around when they started getting into, like, the depth of it. And this was after it happened. They were playing together in Montreal all the time. And he said you could tell, like, it bothered Weber. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, when you go back, like, it's kind of interesting because we just had a situation here in Toronto where I live where they just retired Vince Carter's number. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it was a beautiful ceremony and, you know, the Raptors did a great job with it, but there still are fans here who were like, I don't agree with this. Mm-hmm. And there are still fans here who think he owes them an apology for forcing his way out the way he did. And it's been a long time. It's been 20 years, 20 plus years. And, you know, people probably should move on, but it's sports and they don't. And, you know, I think with Weber and Poyle, well, they both moved on and both deserve to be there. Like, if you really get down to the circumstances of that trade, I still think there are people who are bothered about the offer sheet. Mm-hmm. And I still think there are people who are bothered about that. You know, there was a dinner like the week before he got traded, and he felt he was told he'd never go anywhere. So I think for the most part, people move on, Derek. Mm-hmm. But if you really pick at the scab, there's still some pain there.
Well, I can understand because, you know, me being let go in what was it, 04? Yes, I've gotten over it, but it's still, like, if you want to deeply talk about it, it still sort of hurts that you didn't try to do whatever you needed to do to keep me, considering I hadn't even reached the top of my game yet. So I can understand when you say that, I can understand from an athlete's perspective. Yeah, you're right.
Like, you know, it's funny, Derek, like when it was over and I kind of thought the speeches were really good. You know what really struck me was how nervous David Poile was. Like, you could tell, like, he was really struck by it. But someone said to me, like, they kind of poked at at the thing a little bit. You're like, yeah, whenever it comes up, it's still there. Like, it's, you know, people have a lot of pride. There's no question about that.
I think you could do a full-length story about that. There's no doubt. I would even wind it back one more chapter than you did, Elliot, and that would be the arbitration situation the year before the offer sheet. I think that probably started the ball rolling the wrong way.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It was unfortunate, I think, that it got to that point. But I think if you just back off of all the emotions and look at the net result of the trade, it was not a bad deal, really, for either team. I mean, the Predators got three great seasons from PK Subban, successful seasons.
Yep.
But no doubt, he did look like he was going to be a guy before he signed the offer sheet that would never not be a Predator. But I think the future, I don't know if you got this vibe, Elliot, but I feel like the future is bright in terms of Shea Weber someday realigning in some form or fashion with the organization, with Barry Trotz, you know, and the respect he has for Barry Trotz.
I do believe that. I believe it's been discussed. I remember when Shea Weber came back for the outdoor game in Nashville, I got a call after that weekend from someone who said, "You watch. I don't know when and I don't know where, but Shea Weber's going to work for the Predators." And, you know, so that was a few years ago. And, you know, still, like, there was time remaining on his contract. And, you know, the one thing is, like, I asked him when I saw him last week, I was like, you know, what's keeping you busy right now? He said, he joked, like, he's like a taxi driver. He drives, he's got his kids, he drives them around everywhere. He says, wherever they need to go, I take them, and I love it. And, you know, so I think there's that. I think he enjoys being a dad, which is, you know, for those of us who are fathers, it's the world's most important job. You got to do that right. And so I think there's a commitment to that. And you know, I think the other thing, too, is, I mean, you guys know Weber as well as I do. Like, if he's going to go into hockey operations, he's going to want to do it properly. And, you know, that's a time commitment. I don't think it'll be like the time commitment that Barry Trotz has it, but I think he's going to want to do it right. And so, I think that between like his contract ending and being a father, like it's going to set up. But like I said, this guy who's always right about everything, he told me the day will come. He believes that Weber and the Predators will have something going. But I'll tell you this, like I could see other teams doing it too. Like he said, you know, his contract was owned by Vegas for a while. He had a little bit of work for them, and he liked it. And I'm sure Montreal would like it. But I know the Predators, when he came for the outdoor game, there was a bit of a thaw. Happily, they did talk to him about it and discuss it internally.
This is another thing to look for, Elliot. When the team gets back home, they're going to bring Shea Weber and David Poile to be honored by the fans. And, you know, David Poile has been honored a few times, because in his retirement last year, that was a big thing to honor him, and they'll do it again. But the fans have really never gotten a chance to honor Shea Weber with the ovation and the accolades that I think he deserves because of all of what you just said, the drama and everything. And he came back for Pekka Rinne's retirement and retirement of his number, the statue and all that. And you could just sense it. The fans want to reach out to Shea Weber so bad. He's been here a number of times, but they've never really had him in the spotlight. And as you know, he can't stand the spotlight. But I do think it's going to be a pretty special night a week from Saturday.
Well, I agree with that. And the next morning after the Hall of Fame inductions, I walked into the hotel where all the guests were staying, because I was going to a conference there, and I walked into David Poile, and he was standing there with Sean Henry, who I've met before, the CEO of the Predators, and Michelle Kennedy, who's the COO, and it was the first time I'd ever met her, although obviously I know who she is, but it was the first time I'd ever met her. And you could tell, like, they were beaming. Like, this was a big week for your team. We've talked about this before, how I think the NHL is a better place because Nashville's in it. But I think whenever you're a young franchise and you've only been around for, 25 years, like, you're still making your imprint on the league, right? So you get your first two Hall of Famers, your executive and your builder and your player. And, like, it's massive. It's massive for them, and you could see how happy they were. And, I think the thing is, like, too, the funny thing about Weber is I have a question, Willie, I always ask players or anybody who goes into the Hall of Fame, like, what was the most meaningful compliment you ever received? And, like, he couldn't do it. He was like, I don't like compliments. And I'm cut from a similar cloth. I know exactly what he's referring to about there. But he was, I was like, you can't even think of one. And he goes, no, I just hate them. So, like, it's going to be interesting to see whoever that, you'd probably tell the entire crowd to sit down as they're giving him an ovation.
I think you're probably right. That doesn't surprise me at all to hear that when I've read.
You know what's really funny, Adam, like, you're in there on a day-to-day basis. I can't remember who it was, but someone told me, like, they said that when Weber had one of his kids born, he, like, gave crap to a reporter who wrote about it. He's like, why do you have to write about that? That's my family.
If I recall correctly, how many children does he have? I don't remember off the top of my head.
I want to say three, but don't quote me on that.
I'm not sure if I was here for when his first child was born, but I think maybe the second or third. And I remember the team was like, yeah, we're not giving you his name or when he was born. We're just telling you if it was a boy or a girl. Like, that was the only information that they would provide. But he would
go crazy about that. If someone wrote it, he was like, why do you have to write about that? We did a piece, you may remember, on Hockey Night in Canada when he was named to the Olympic team. And we had to follow him around for a day. And David Poile and Barry Trotz convinced him he had to do it. He hated it, but he was great about it. Fantastic. I mean, as you guys know, he's just a tremendous human being, but he just does not like attention. Yeah.
The presence and respect he has is just cannot be beat for sure. Elliot, one non-Hall of Fame question here. With everybody together, the GMs and all the hockey people, I'm just curious if you had any new information on the Ryan Johansson situation, because as Adam asked you before, the Dante Fabro thing, the clearing of the salary cap space and the fact that he had been basically passed up by Mark Delgazzo in the present, that was really the motive of doing it. But obviously, anything down the road with Johansson would be huge as well for flexibility.
Well, I should mention about Fabro too, is that I do think there were teams that were interested in trading for him, but not at the full money. Like, the money, right. the salary slot was the thing, the 2.5. But you guys have two retained salary transactions, and the max is 3. And I think, and going back to last year, when you guys went through this with Tyson Barry, Barry Trotz had made it clear he was not interested in that. He did not want to lock up that last spot. So that did handcuff you a bit here. I think I mentioned it to you guys. I know I wrote it last week, but there's two kinds of grievances between the league and the player can have. And that one is called an expedited grievance, and the other is called a non-expedited grievance. And an expedited grievance means it's of utmost priority and it needs to get sorted out right away. And that means they call a quicker process to it. And they didn't ask for that. They asked for the regular. So I what that says to me is that the Predators shouldn't expect, like, a quick resolution on this, and that they should expect that the status quo was going to stay the same for a bit longer period of time because it's not an expedited grievance. And I'll say this, the other thing, like there was a time in the summer when it looked like people were really questioning whether or not Johansson had a case. I'm not hearing that same thing anymore. Like, I think it's a much more, it's a much more challenging case in terms of now, like, but it's, I heard there was a time in the summer where people were confident that Johansson was in trouble in this one. I don't hear it the same way now. So it's much less clear cut and it's going to be much more of a challenge. I think everybody wants a settlement and we'll see what happens, but it's not as cut and dried as I heard in the summer.
So I guess what I'm hearing you say, Elliot, is that the Predators really have no way of expediting it, right? Because
no,
I would think if you're
not
Barry Trotz, you would at least love to know that by the time the weeks of the trade deadline talk, right, start leading up. So that would be huge information that you really need to have one way or the other by that time. But you don't really have a way of doing that, right? You're at the mercy of the league is what I'm hearing you say?
Well, you're at the mercy of the kind of grievance they file. And they grieved it, but they didn't ask for it to happen faster.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast. Elliot, I know you just said you don't like compliments, but your insight is so invaluable. Another wonderful segment from you. Thank you so much for joining us. We're still ranking you ahead
of Barry Trotz with the weekly.
Yes.
Hit. There's no question.
No, that's the only thing that matters, like that I'm still the number one hockey hit on the station. Like, Trotz does a great job when he breaks news, but he's always number two.
Well, Elliot, as always, a pleasure to chat. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yep.
Elliot Freeman joining us on the program. So my first question to Elliot, I referenced something I heard on NHL Network. I want you all to hear it if you didn't. So we're going to play that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3. The game.